You this morning. The first article I'll be reading is A Car Hit by Train While Driver Apparently Using Cell Phone. Decatur. A Decatur woman was lucky to escape serious injury or death Tuesday after her car was hit by a freight train as she allegedly chatted on her cell phone while stopping in the middle of a railroad track. Dovey Brown, 40, had to be cut from the wreckage of her four-door vehicle after the accident that happened at 7:45 a.m. at the crossing near East Green Hill Road and U.S. 36. Brown was later treated in the hospital for injuries described by police as not life-threatening. Police said Brown had been stopped behind a bus that had crossed over the tracks and halted for a stop sign. The bus then drove off, but Brown apparently didn't react as the crossing lights lit up and the CSX freight train, pulling 45 empty grain cars, bore down on her at 25 miles per hour, with its engineer blasting the train's horn. She just sat there distracted, engrossed in her conversation, and we have several witnesses who saw her with the phone up to her head, said Police Sergeant Chris Peters of Decatur. The train driver was going west, comes around a curve and starts hitting his horn and initiated the emergency brake. That's all he could do, and the train stops when the train stops, Peters added. The locomotive slammed into the car on the driver's side just behind the driver's door and dragged the vehicle for 50 feet before it broke free and was left on an embankment. The driver of the car was very lucky, Peters added. If she had been just 12 inches farther back on the track, it would have hit her right on the driver's door and really hurt her a lot more. Brown was later cited for using her cell phone while driving, disobeying a train crossing signal, and failure to wear a seatbelt. The next article is Supreme Court deadlocks on teachers' union fees. This is from Springfield. A deadlock at the U.S. Supreme Court may prove to be a setback for Governor Bruce Rauner's efforts to weaken the power of public employee unions. Left with a vacancy and even numbers of justices since the death of Justice Antonio Scalia in February, the High Court announced Tuesday that it had split 4-4 on a case involving so-called fair share fees paid by California teachers who don't wish to belong to a union but are covered by its contracts. The one-sentence opinion doesn't say how the justices were divided. Opponents of the fees argue that they violate the First Amendment rights of public employees by forcing them to support political activities they don't agree with. While supporters say they're necessary because the employees still benefit from the contract unions negotiate on their behalf. The case has implications for Illinois because Rauner asked a federal court last year to weigh in on the constitutionality of collecting such fees from state workers. U.S. District Judge Robert Gettleman ruled in May that the Republican governor didn't have legal standing to bring the lawsuit, but he allowed three state workers to carry the case forward. Rauner called Tuesday's Supreme Court ruling a tragic decision by the court. It's a huge issue, this decision to force government employees, taxpayer employees, to pay union dues and to be in a union they may not agree with, Rauner told reporters during a visit to Leroy High School. I think that a fundamental loss of freedom of speech and freedom I think that's a fundamental loss of freedom of speech and freedom of political expression. Oral arguments in the case took place about a month before Scalia's death, and Rauner said it was clear that he would have sided with four justices who opposed the mandatory fees. The Supreme Court ruled in 2014 that Illinois home health care workers paid by the state couldn't be required to pay union fees if they didn't want to belong to a union. But the court noted in its decision that the workers weren't full-fledged state employees. Though no longer a parity to the current lawsuit involving Illinois state employees, Rauner predicted that our case will end up before the Supreme Court and pledged to continue the fight for the freedom of political expression and the rights of free speech for government employees. But what will happen if it does not reach the High Court remains highly uncertain. Because the eight remaining justices were unable to reach a majority opinion in the California case, a ruling by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and the 1977 Supreme Court precedent on which it is based, stands. However, new challenges like the ones in Illinois put on hold pending the ruling may now move forward. Republicans in the U.S. Senate have vowed not to grant a confirmation hearing to Merrick Garland, President Barack Obama's nominee to fill the vacancy left by Scalia's death. U.S. Senator Mark Kirk, Republican from Highland Park, who's in the midst of a tough re-election campaign against U.S. Representative Tammy Duckworth of Hoffman Estates, on Tuesday became the first GOP senator to meet with Garland. If Republicans persist in blocking any Obama nominee from being seated during the president's final year in office, the outcome of future fair share cases could hinge on the results of the November election. Anders Lindahl, a spokesman for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Council 31, one of the defendants in the Illinois case, said Tuesday's decision is a victory for working people. Today's decision is a win for public service workers and their right to join together in strong unions and advocate for better treatment for themselves and better services for other communities, Lindahl said. Cases like the one in California and Illinois are backed by wealthy special interests who want to rig our economy in their own favor. One of the only ways working people have to restore some of the balance in our society is by coming together with their co-workers through their unions. The next article from Decatur is titled Mail Order Ecstasy Pills Lead to Arrest. Police say investigators intercepted a shipment of ecstasy pills destined for a Decatur man, and then undercover detectives completed the delivery Monday. They found the suspect with baked goods laced with cannabis. Brandon M. Richardson, 19, was arrested at his home and jailed on preliminary charges of possessing illegal drugs with intent to traffic in them. Sworn statements say Homeland Security investigators intercepted the package of 15 green ecstasy tablets on March 24th after a drug-sniffing dog at Chicago O'Hare's airport had alerted to the pills, which had been sent from the Netherlands. Members of the Decatur Police Street Crimes Unit and Macon County's Sheriff's Office detectives then conducted a controlled delivery of the package at the address where Richardson was at. He was arrested there and a search warrant executed. Richardson advised that he had purchased the ecstasy pills over the internet from a location in the Netherlands, the sworn statement notes. It alleged he told police he planned to have the drugs sold to college students. Also located inside the residence was approximately 329 grams of suspected cannabis and baked goods containing suspected cannabis. According to the sworn statements, the suspected cannabis field tested positive. A digital scale was located in close proximity to the suspected cannabis. Richards advised that he sells the cannabis for profit. Richardson remained jailed Tuesday night in lieu of posting a $150,000 bond. He is due in court April 5th. The next article, also from Decatur, titled Library Stakeholders Hear What's Next. Those investing in the Decatur Public Library's future learned more Tuesday about how that might look under a plan to transfer the building to the city of Decatur. Members of the public, Decatur Public Library Foundation, and Friends of the Decatur Public Library were invited to a special informational meeting Tuesday to review the long-brewing plan, which the library board is expected to vote on today. Board President John Phillips provided an overview of the deal, which would take effect May 1st. "We're going to get something significant out of this process," he said. "We aren't just transferring the building. We are actually going through a process that will cause the city to help us, and we help them, in order to make this really a first-class facility for a long time in the future." Under the plan, the city would acquire the building and assume responsibility for its capital needs, including the annex building and the parking lot. The library would continue to occupy its current space and pay rent starting at $575,000 annually, including utilities. The city would seek a tenant for unused space on the library's second floor and its annex building. The proposal from the city came in November, several months after the Decatur City Council failed to approve an earlier plan to sell the library to the Decatur Public Building Commission. Under the earlier deal, details of which were made public in November 2014, Macon County offices would have moved into the library facility. Council members cited concerns about outstanding city debt related to the library as one reason for not backing that proposal. Phillips did not dwell on comparisons between the two deals Tuesday, but he did field a handful of questions from audience members. Asked about what kind of tenant the city might be considering, he said the city staff have already shown the building to several groups. "We have had a lot of discussion about making sure that it's someone who is an appropriate neighbor for the library," he said. "Probably another of Decatur's gambling establishments, or an exotic dance club or something like that, wouldn't be a good fit for the library. And I think the city knows that as well as we do." The Friends of the Decatur Public Library and the Project Read both would remain in the library under the proposal. Karen Becker, president and longtime member of the Friends, said she was most concerned about how library maintenance might change. The proposal would have Decatur Center staff assume the duties that are now fulfilled by the library maintenance employees. "Those workers are very dedicated and respond to problems in a New York minute," she said. "Plus, they help with the Herculean task of moving materials for the Friends' annual book sale at the Civic Center, which is the organization's biggest fundraiser." Personally, though, Becker said she preferred this deal to the one that had been considered with the county and building commission. I feel like it's a city's people who pay taxes for the Decatur Public Library, the people of the city of Decatur, she said. I really feel that we have more say with the city council than we do with the county board. Tina Zindel McWilliams is a board president for the library. Tina Zindel McWilliams is a board president of the Library Foundation, a nonprofit that has raised money for capital projects such as the library's local history room. If the city assumes responsibility for the building, she said, the organization would need to assess its mission going forward. We need to look at what is our 501c3 status. What can we and what can we not do, she said. It's really new territory, a new conversation for us. A past president of the Friends and of the Library Board, Zindel McWilliams, said she was ashamed of the dilapidated parking lot and empty annex buildings attached to what should be one of the downtown area's crown jewels. Further, she said, the library board had recognized for years that the city librarian was not hired to be a property manager. This deal can address those issues and allow the library to move forward. I am glad that perhaps we are turning a page, she said. It's time to move on. It is time to say, where are we going next? The next article today is from Stu Ellis, reporting on Farmers Await U.S. The next article today is from Stu Ellis, regarding Farmers Await USDA crop reports. If you don't see many farmers for the rest of the day, that's not a surprise. And if you search tomorrow morning, still doesn't turn up any. Just be patient. They aren't in hiding, but they are hunkered down. Crash helmets and seatbelt tighten. They might be found under the desk or where the family gathers to wait out a tornado. That's because the U.S. Department of Agriculture will be releasing two reports on Thursday that could blow through the corn and soybean markets like a tornado, causing a shock wave that rolls across the corn bale. Those reports are the Prospective Planning Report and the Quarterly Grain Stock Reports. Either or both could roll the grain markets and upset family budgets in an unimaginable way. The USDA's March 31st Prospective Planning Report is designed to give a hint about what farmers are considering planning for corn and soybean acreage. The USDA surveyed farmers across the Corn Belt late in February and early in March, asking for estimates. The market is expecting 90 million acres of corn will be planted, along with 82.5 million acres of soybeans. If either or both end up with higher numbers, the recent excitement resulting from higher market prices will all be for naught. The November soybean contract has gained 42.5 cents since March 2nd, with the help of reduced sales by farmers and political turmoil in Brazil. But with soybean prices above the $9 per bushel threshold, farmers are unloading bins and hauling beans to elevators and processors. The political turmoil in Brazil could quickly come to an end with the impeachment or resignation of President Dilma Rousseff, and that issue would suddenly become moot. Oh, fuck. Market analysts say there is really no long-term fundamental reason for the current soybean market rally, and if farmers had planned to increase acreage when the USDA survey forms were returned, the rally would quickly evaporate. It is the same with the corn market. Although the Decatur corn futures contract has only gained 9 cents in the past 3 weeks, the analysts say there is no real reason for that to happen. That market rally could vaporize with higher than expected corn acreage. The other USDA reports being released Thursday reflect the corn and soybean stocks on the farm and in commercial storage as of March 1st, when the survey was taken. Grain traders in Chicago have been looking at export data, ethanol refiners' use of corn, and estimates how much has been fed to livestock based on cattle and swine inventory numbers. If there is more than what the market expects, boom, there goes the rally in the market. Grain stocks are held by elevators and processors, which are required to report their grain inventory. But the amount of grain in farm bins is only the USDA's best guess, based on sample answers reported by farmers. The critical issue is how much is being held by farmers, and the fear is there is a lot of corn and soybeans still stored on the farm. That is one reason the market hasn't climbed any higher than it has. This Thursday, fireworks show will be lit at 11 a.m. Based on how much grain they have, either sold or not sold, will determine farmers' reactions to the report. He may remain hidden for the rest of the day and sink into deep depression, or he may emerge with a lighthearted smile and get back to the daily routine. Farmer reactions won't last long. In the next 10 to 15 minutes, the market will have moved on, forgotten about the USDA reports, and will be trading the latest weather forecasts for the summer. Thank goodness for El Nino, El Nina, and the polar vortex. Farmers need to come out of hiding. The next article, Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen foresees gradual rate hikes. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen said Tuesday that the Fed still envisions only a gradual pace of interest rate increases in light of the global pressures that could affect the U.S. economy. Her comments spurred on by a rally on Wall Street, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average closing at its highest level of the year. Yellen didn't specify a timetable for the further hikes to follow the Fed rate increase in December from record lows. She said the United States appear limited, but cautioned that the assessment is subject to considerable uncertainty. Speaking to the Economic Club of New York, Yellen said that the central bank is monitoring a global economic slump, sharply lower oil prices, and stock market turbulence, which she said have hurt some U.S. consumers and key sectors such as manufacturing. Singling out China, the world's largest economy, after the United States, Yellen noted widespread uncertainty over how well Beijing will manage a delicate slowdown in coming years. She said that because foreign economic growth seems to be further weakened this year, the Fed will proceed cautiously in raising rates. In light of her comments, most economists expect no hike in the Fed's next policy meeting, April 26-27, despite remarks last week from other Fed officials that had raised the possibility of a rate increase then. Investors welcomed Yellen's message that the Fed would move slowly in raising rates. The Dow surged nearly 98 points, or 0.6%. Despite a growing chorus of calls from even centrist-leaning officials to resume raising policy rates, Chair Yellen stuck to the dovish script of the March meeting statement when the Fed expressed concerns about the global economy and kept rates unchanged, said Sal Guteri, senior economist at BMO Capital Markets. Yellen noted that the U.S. job market and housing recovery have lifted the economy close to full health, despite the risks that remain. She observed that the economy has benefited from low long-term U.S. borrowing rates. Those rates have been held down by money flowing into U.S. bonds from investors, who have scaled back their expectations for the number of Fed rate hikes this year from 4 to 2 at most. The Fed chair said that while stock prices have rebounded to roughly where they were when 2016 began, in other respects, economic and financial conditions remain less favorable than they did in December, when the Fed raised its key rate modestly after keeping it near zero since 2008, when the financial crisis erupted. Yellen cautioned that the Fed's expectations for rates remain subject to revision to reflect any significant change in the U.S. or international economic outlook. I anticipate that the overall fallout for the U.S. economy from global market developments since the start of the year will most likely be limited, although this assessment is subject to considerable uncertainty, she said. God damn it. We will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review on March 30th. Please stay tuned.